Welcome to Between Two Printers, a podcast where we will discuss all things 3D printing and O&P. I'm your host, Jeff, and I've been with Warum for the past 19 years, and recently my role has been increasingly revolving around 3D printing. So we decided to create a podcast to discuss and share some of the learnings we've had along this journey.
Welcome to another episode of Between Two Printers. I'm joined once again by Chris Hanford. What are we going to talk about today, Chris?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. It's great to be back. Today, I wanted to pose a question that I know is on the mind of a lot of practitioners. Many people have shown a great interest in 3D printing, but as an industry, we have a responsibility to our patients. So I think we need to answer the following question, which is, you know, once I've printed a 3D printed device, now what? How do I trust that it's suitable for my patient?
Yeah, great question. I'd say it's even bigger than that. We have a responsibility to our patients, but really to the whole industry, to hold each other accountable to ensure that people are treated appropriately. And, you know, this is about the industry having defined test protocols for any given device or treatment for a patient. So it's not just about 3D printing. It's about the next innovations to come. You know, how do we know that we're achieving our objectives?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But for the simple practicality of determining if a 3D printed product or device is suitable for a patient, I guess there's just such a difference to the traditional thermoplastic or laminated devices that we have such familiarity with. How does the industry gain confidence in the additive manufacturing world?
Well, I mean, we have been making these thermoplastic and laminated devices for decades, but they've been changing over that period of time. We make incremental changes all the time, sometimes with materials, other times with device design, whether it's a carbon fiber prepeg or layup instead of fiberglass, thermoplastics, or steel and leather, or wood for that matter. Sockets have evolved in the materials used. But not just that, socket designs have changed as well, whether a mass socket or a more open model with flexible liner, or like an infinite socket from Limb Innovations. There have been changes to devices even quite recently with just that one type.
Okay, I totally see your point. There's a lot of potential improvements for the patient with 3D printing. But with those gains, there are also some drawbacks and even risks if you're figuring things out for yourself. We've spoken in a previous episode on how to get started with 3D printing. And a key part of that was starting with an industry expert or a central fab that is producing O&P devices. But once you get started, how do you have trust in what you're putting on your patient is appropriate?
Certainly. And I mean, again, this comes down to whether it's 3D printing or not. It's about figuring out a process to evaluate things. So from an orthosis standpoint, you know, one of the best ways that you can do it is to test it on somebody who doesn't need it, whether that's an AFO or an in-shoe orthotic. You know, I can make one for myself and I can get the steps in and I can make sure that everything is working the way that I want and then start slimming it down from there in terms of optimizing the amount of weight and the amount of material in the device and making sure that it still performs in the way that I need. And then I think what you've said there is really important too, which is working with your industry experts or CFABs that are already making these things. So rather than just trying to guess right off the bat, if you're working with somebody that's making these devices already, find out what technology they're using, find out what sort of materials they're using, find out what sorts of thicknesses they're using to achieve the functional requirements of the device. Those are the sorts of things that you want to find out in order to do these things. It's not as though you're starting from scratch and you shouldn't treat it that way. There's lots of information out there and a lot of people willing to share their experiences.
Right. And as you've, you know, once you graduate from sort of the handholding approach of working with a central fab or an industry expert, you know, you take the training wheels off and you start printing things for yourself. You know, how do you validate your design?
Well, so I mean, design's one piece, right? That's what is the device kind of look like? There's a bunch of other aspects to this. So obviously the design is going to affect the fit and a little bit of the function, but your materials choice, your print technology choice, those are going to have some effects on the material strength and ultimately the device properties. And then there's other little things that you want to really make sure that you nail down so that you've got a consistent process. if I print the same device, you know, three times, like starting from, let's say, a scan where I scan the same patient three times and I modify each of those three scans separately and I make three devices separately, if those things don't come out functionally equivalent, we have a problem. So you really need to nail down your entire process from the shape capture to the modification of the internal surface to the modification of the external surface, which ultimately determines the device performance, as well as your material handling and then the printing itself. So, you know, for example, if I'm in a part of the world where it's quite humid and I just leave my material out in the ambient environment, it's going to have variable amounts of humidity in it, and that's going to affect the print quality. So I need to make sure that I'm using dried material, but I'm not going to overcook it for, you know, days at a time. I'm going to have a defined drying protocol that I apply to my materials and a defined storage protocol that I apply to my materials. And I'm going to make sure that my machine is prepped the same way so that I'm going to get the same results each time, because if I can't do that, then I'm going to have problems evaluating anything that I do, because one day I might make a device that is, you know, perfect. It's flexible where it needs to be. It's strong enough where it needs to be. And everything is great. And the next day I may make something that's all floppy or falls apart, and that's no good. But I guess, you know, getting back to what I was saying about changes being an ongoing thing, you know, if we take a random person from industry, you know, unless they've graduated in the last 5 years, if they're only working on or producing what they learned in school, I'm going to guess those people aren't terribly concerned about what's going on in 3D printing. To those who do want to push the envelope, they'll need to start engaging in a way that others have independent of 3D printing. And I'm talking about the ones who come up with using new ways of using new materials or new socket designs or new orthosis designs. You know, those people that want to push the envelope, it takes some effort. It takes a certain kind of person to be able to push those limits and to see the sorts of things that you can do, but also the sorts of things that you need to do to validate the process.
Yeah, there's a lot there to unpack. What I guess if we're talking about those people that are pushing the boundaries and are 3D printing, what can they do to validate their designs?
Right. So things need to be tried and tested against some gold standard. You need to take what you know works and then try the new stuff against it. You don't come up with new designs in a vacuum. You're going to make iterations and you're going to compare it to stuff that you know works, that you've been making for ages. This gets back to where I started with respect to the big picture, whether materials, device design, or even, you know, at a higher level, the overarching treatment protocols. If these things are going to be changing, we need to test them against something. You can't come up with something new without having something to test it against. And even if you do, who cares? Because you're not going to convince anyone else to use it unless you can say this device or this material or this treatment protocol is better than this other one that we've been using. And here are the reasons why. If you can't answer those questions, you know, it's all for naught. Hmm. And then, yeah, like I was saying before, you know, you got to get a consistent process down. If you don't have a consistent process there too, it's meaningless. If I make one device for one patient and it works great, you know, that patient's going to be super happy. But again, I'm not going to be able to convince anybody else to adopt this protocol unless I can do this again and again and again and get similar or equivalent results. I mean, you can think about it from any sort of testing protocols that are applied to anything. If you can't get the same results, or more importantly, if you can't have other people get the same result following your protocols, then you've not really proven yourself or your methodology.
Sounds like a lot of work. How can I make it easier on myself in terms of finding that consistency and that predictable result?
You know, again, this comes back to looking at things a little bit further back. This isn't just about 3D printing. So you're going to make these achievements the same way that you would independent of 3D printing. If you're looking at changing the design, start with subtle changes. Make sure that you're still getting the results you want. If you're looking at changing materials, you know, don't just go pick something out of the bin and start doing a thing. See if somebody else is already using that material for a human contact application, maybe for a different part of the body. Maybe in a different country, maybe you know, maybe your competitor. Just remember that for non-custom applications, the regulatory requirements are greater. So there's going to be off-the-shelf devices that are out there that are using these materials, and they will have undergone much more testing than are ever going to be required for our custom devices. So if you can find what materials are being used for an off-the-shelf device, very likely you're also going to be able to find that it's already been registered with the FDA, for example. And, you know, at least then you know that, hey, this material should have been tested properly.
That seems reasonable. And what about strength? I think at the end of the day, what we're most concerned about is, you know, we don't want to have a device breaking when a patient is wearing it.
Yeah, neither do I. And the reality is you will over-design it. That's mostly what happens all the time due to lack of a quick and simple way to evaluate every device. Most devices are thicker, stiffer, and heavier than required. For elite athletes, maybe some military or just very wealthy people, they may end up with an optimized device that's only as strong as it needs to be in order to be lighter. But that's not everybody. The majority of devices out there are over-designed because we don't have means of evaluating them to perfection. Ultimately, what the industry needs is to develop test protocols for all device types that can be evaluated reasonably quickly and cheaply.
Okay. So we know from experience that you can have a device that seems to be strong when it comes out of the machine, but not be able to stand up to thousands or millions of cycles. Are there certain designs or device types that can be produced and fit on patients without industrial cycle testing of some gold standard? And are there others that do require that?
So some devices or portions thereof are meant to be more rigid. By that, you know, I would consider, for example, the distal end of a socket. In such a case, beefing things up is generally going to work out very well for you. Other devices function by flexing in their normal course of use, such as the toe plate on a full-length AFO. In that sort of device, adding thickness or rigidity may in fact cause it to fail. Thankfully, in most of those cases, though, the failure is far less catastrophic than it would be with the distal adapter failing on a socket. The end result is that in these cases, you may, in fact, design it to be more flexible than you would otherwise so that it bends rather than breaks. You know, I've mentioned cycle testing before, and, you know, the device may not fail because of a force or deflection applied, but rather, like you said, the repetition of tens of thousands or even millions of cycles. And that's really what we need to be concerned about in some of these cases.
Fair enough. You know, and I think I get all that. Yeah, a lot to think about. But I think if we just sort of recap and look back at what we've been saying today, if I can try to summarize, there's a few key points. You know, we want to work off developments that others have done in terms of the materials, designs, and techniques. We need to nail down a process, and we need to be careful that we're always following it so that we can trust what we've done in the past will work in the future. And it's good to start by being more conservative with design changes and material strength issues until we're comfortable trimming the fat, so to speak. Is there anything else that you can think of?
No, I mean, I think at a high level, those are probably the key things that you really need to worry about. And if you can get all those things taken care of, then, you know, you should be comfortable with your patient walking off on a 3D printed device.
Super cool. Can't wait. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for joining me.
If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to like, review, or share on whichever platform you're listening on. We build these episodes according to what we think you want to hear. So please do leave us some feedback by either leaving a comment or reaching out to us at info@forum.com. Until then, take care.